Robert Koto, you're on the panel. RNZ National, Wallace Chapman with you today. Verity Johnson and Stephen Franks join me. Pat in Christchurch says we're talking about replacing the Ashburton line, whatever it takes. We're talking about that at 4:25. Pat suggests Ashburton spend a week here in one day. That's quite good.
That's
quite
bad.
Good.
That's not bad.
Parent says, last ball my teen attended cost me a fortune for dress hire, professional makeup. I borrowed Peter Talley's Excalibur car from the WOW Museum. Still not welcome. I think you're right, Verity, in terms of a collective word for happiness. Ronja from Munich says, the word for the collective feeling you're describing is Gemeinschaftsgefühl.
Of course it is. That was on the tip of my tongue.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there you go. Anyway, new data has found a reduction in demand in nationwide housing valuations, which could be the first signs of the housing market slowing. CoreLogic House Price Index tracks property value change, and its latest report today has found a reduction in demand valuations, down 11% compared to the previous 6 months. House prices, of course, still remain high and climbing. Auckland saw the average property values rise by a further 2.4% in April, and the average value there is now $1.25 million. In the capital, the quarterly rate of growth exceeded 10.4% at the end of April. With us to discuss is CoreLogic Head of Research, Nick Goodall. Nick, welcome.
Kia ora.
Yeah, kia ora. So a reduction in demand of valuations down 11% compared to the previous 6 months. Do you want to explain that a bit for us, Nick?
Absolutely, yeah. So what we track is essentially when anyone goes into the bank and they require a mortgage to secure the purchase of a property, often the bank will need to get a valuation for that property. And every time they order a valuation, whether that's an automated valuation, which is a modelled valuation for that property, or that they require a full valuation for a valuer to go and check that property and assess the value, every time they order one of those, it can go through CoreLogic's panel system. And we can track every time one of those is run. It's a really good measure of demand as to how many of those are being requested every day, every week, every month. So what we do is we track that as a measure of mortgage demand, essentially, and then see how that changes over time. And so, of course, one of the fastest moving measures that we have to see what's happening from an activity perspective, how many people are going to the bank wanting to buy a property and requiring a valuation. And that's those are the figures we've seen that in April. We saw those figures drop by about 11%
yes.
down on the previous 6 months. So, which were a pretty strong 6 months, but certainly we've seen a little bit of reduction in demand, but maybe not as much as everyone expected.
Yes, well, what got me was down 11% in the 6 months. It's not insignificant, is it?
No, it's not. It's probably worth noting that things like school holidays and
yeah.
things can play with this. There's two seasonal differences. We know that as we get closer to winter, that we do see people's activity in the market reduce a little bit. So we're cautious around, you know, every single percent of that being due to the changes announced by the government. But certainly there's a signal there that demand is starting to pull back slightly. I think what's really interesting is actually if you talk to most people, say a week or two ago, they probably would have expected that number to be much greater, you know, 20, 25% reduction, given some of the commentary we've heard out there. So it's probably more surprising for the fact that it hasn't dropped as far away as many people have speculated.
I'll bring up a panelist in very, very shortly. And Verity, you might have a thought on this are you looking for a home? but I mean, house prices are still extremely high, aren't they? And the increase, for example, over the last 12 months in Auckland has been 15.6%, or about or just under $170,000. What of that, and what will the next 12 months bring?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, that's the thing is we've gone through such a strong period of growth right now that, you know, it was almost inevitable that we'd see values start to slow down at some stage. We were certainly, even a couple of months ago, expecting values to start to slow down, mostly off the back of the reintroduction of the loan-to-value ratio restrictions from the Reserve Bank, but also just because, you know, properties are becoming less and less affordable. It's becoming further away from people in terms of the, you know, comparison to their income. And so you're almost going to get to a natural unaffordability standpoint where you'd see values start to slow down at the least and potentially even flatten out coming towards the end of the year.
So is that number still at 6.8 as the sort of the housing unaffordability ratio, which is what it was in 2020, wasn't it? Something like that?
Yeah, towards the end of that. Yeah, I think nationwide around about that. It's a little bit higher in Auckland, of course.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that, of course, that's enabled by low interest rates. And so, you know, it's hard to really put that into the broader historic context when you're saying what's the average income to house prices, because, of course, people can borrow so much more money these days than they ever could in the past.
I have a question. In terms of this is more of a sort of philosophical one. Like, as a 25-year-old, I'm looking at this and I feel utterly crushed by the inevitability of that I will never, ever be able to afford a $1.25 million average, because I'm in Auckland, average house in my hometown. So, because that would be a deposit of what? At least $240,000 if it was 20% deposit? That's insane. Yeah. Like, so what would you say to me if I'm coming to you as a disillusioned, crushed young person? Do you have any advice or, like, words of consolation?
I think one of the interesting things has been that even through the strong growth phase in the last year, or even prior to that, that we still saw first-time buyers generally finding a way into the market. They have tailed off in terms of their share sales in the last couple of quarters. But what we were seeing was that first-time buyers were finding the way, I suppose. You know, they were being able to call on their KiwiSaver funds. They were adjusting their expectations and moving further from town or buying a smaller property than maybe they otherwise have in the past. The other thing around, yes, you're absolutely right, that generally a 20% deposit is required. But when we talk to brokers, they say that often what's really interesting, when the loan-to-value ratio restrictions change, they get all these people either come to them or stop coming to them because of the perception of these changes. And it's worth noting that, you know, up to 20% of the bank's lending can be done with less than a 20% deposit. So as long as you do have good income, which, you know, is still a bit of a problem because not everyone does, there are very still opportunities out there for first-time buyers
to
be able to get that access.
Even a 5 or 10% deposit in most figures is still very high, aren't they? Stephen Franks, your thoughts?
I just listen with despair. I think it's such a disgrace. It's a disgrace to the politicians for the last 20 years who've known what's causing this and have been too without leadership to kill it. It's feeding people the illusion that everyone can say, I don't want change near me, I don't want anything tall near me, but there will be enough building space. And I listen to it all with a sense of despair that we're still not on top of that.
Do you want to have a final comment on that, Nick?
I couldn't agree more. And I think we've got to look back at the last decade or more where we just have not built enough properties and we haven't been forward-looking enough, especially knowing that, you know, our population growth forecasts have been exceptional for a long time. It's not like this was a surprise to us, and we haven't prepared for that. We did suffer a bit off the back of the global financial crisis where the construction industry fell away, and so we weren't building enough houses back then. I think it took a long time to ramp up that momentum to get the industry back flowing again. But, yeah, it's a long time coming, I suppose. But I agree with Stephen in terms of being, you know, awfully disappointing that we've got to this point where, yeah, we are talking about, you know, $50,000-$100,000 deposits, and that's only with a 5 or 10% for a place like Auckland, which should be thriving and having lots of young people able to live and flourish.
Yeah. Good to have you on the program, Nick. Thank you for that. Nick Goodall there is CoreLogic's head of research. So you're 25, you're looking at these figures and you're just going... Actually, someone's just texted here, but could you stop covering these stories? It's absolutely crushingly despair-inducing.
Oh, I agree. Like I completely agree with the person who just texted
too.
That. It makes me so distraught.
I think that there are people who have retired from politics full of honours and, well, not many, but... who ought to be hanging their heads in shame, and there should be no credit for anyone who's been part of the preservation of the RMA.
I think there's also this sense that, you know, we were just saying earlier that first-home buyers can find a way, and often that means, you know,
parents.
Borrowing money from your parents, right? Yeah.
It's creating a class.
Yeah.
It's the inequalities that it's contributing to, and it's completely avoidable.
It's become a middle-class monopoly where it's basically like, you know, if I have middle-class parents, they can bail me out. And, like, given that the median income in this family is $52,000 a year and you're looking at $120,000 for a 10% on an Auckland house, that is just... Yeah. Right.
I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. 17 minutes past four, you're on the panel, RNZ National. Principals are calling for an overhaul of initial teacher education because some newly qualified primary teachers are ill-prepared to teach basic subjects like reading and maths, reports RNZ's John Gerritsen. The Principals Federation, the Educational Institute and the Normal and Model School Association told RNZ many new graduates had studied how to be a teacher for just 1 year and that wasn't enough. We have increasingly become concerned over the last 7 years around the quality and the decline of initial teacher education, said Stuart Armistead, the president of the Normal and Model School Association. So to discuss with us is the University of Auckland Dean of Education, Mark Barrow. Mark, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace.
You're not entirely convinced with this assessment, Mark?
Well, no, not entirely. I mean, there are truths in all of these stories, but for a generation, 1 year of initial teacher education has been sort of the standard for a graduate and has always done the job up until now. It's interesting that we've got now we're in a situation of oversupply of teachers, and this sort of debate around the quality then starts to rear its head when we can stop worrying about the quantity. So, you know, this is sort of an argument that comes around from time to time, and I think it needs to be addressed and looked at.
What about the issue that was around about the basics of quality, literacy and mathematics programs, and that some teachers are falling short in this area?
Yes, I mean, that's also an interesting conundrum, isn't it? I mean, the actual data that as a system shows that our maths and math scores anyway are actually improving over the last few years. Our rank alongside other countries isn't, but the actual absolute scores are. So some good math teaching is going on in schools.
And some isn't.
We need to hold on to that. So, and some isn't, that's right. But I guess that's the case in all the professions across the world. I think that one of the issues that we have in New Zealand is it's very hard to know how to prepare beginning teachers because there is no education system as such in New Zealand. Every school designs its own math program, its own literacy program and language program. And so, you know, it's almost impossible to prepare teachers to go into the multiplicity of situations that they might come across. So, you know, in the past, we had a much more uniform system of education, and when the one-year programs were designed, students were going into schools and it didn't matter whether they went to school A or school D, the math program would have looked similar and the literacy program would have looked similar, and they would have been prepared to address that particular curriculum. Now, if they go to school A, the maths curriculum can be completely different to the curriculum in school D, and there's no support for those teachers at all to actually make that transition.
Okay.
So that is an argument for a longer training period, because if we're going to continue to develop schools that have very different curricula, then and universities have to begin to prepare teachers for that, then actually, yes, a longer period is needed.
Let's bring on our panel, Verity.
I'm just curious, why was there the change? You mentioned that it used to be a more standardised...
Was it the College of Education model?
No, I'm talking about what's happening in schools.
Ah, sorry.
Yes, you know, I mean, in schools, when Tomorrow Schools was introduced, every school, and not only in Tomorrow Schools, but since then, schools have designed their own curricula and their own approaches. There is no system now that there used to be of advisors across the country that work with schools on, say, maths programs or literacy programs. Every school does it.
So how on earth do you standardise?
I was on boards for many years. I think I had 17 years in total on different school boards after Tomorrow Schools came in, and we didn't design our curriculum. The thing was pretty standard. We would have liked to have done more.
Oh, well, you would have worked with the New Zealand curriculum, but the actual approach that schools take is something that schools design themselves.
But that's in every business and profession. We wouldn't dream of asking a university to prepare lawyers for the multiplicity of law jobs. It has to be on the job.
Yeah, well, it is, of course, in teacher education. A one-year program followed by 2 years of induction in a school is the model in New Zealand. It's not just 1 year.
Yeah, but well, I'm just surprised that someone would suggest the solution to what they're saying as a basic quality program would be to extend the period of training. I mean, the first thing would be to look and see whether you were getting the right kind of recruits.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and we work hard at that, and with our partner schools, we do our very best to get the best recruits.
Verity.
I was just curious, you'd mentioned that you said that we weren't in a teacher shortage. Are you suggesting that actually we've come back from, because I remember last year we was facing a massive teacher shortage around, wasn't it like 60 secondary school teachers were predicted to be like in deficit for in every Auckland classroom?
In 2019, that's right. But actually the ministry said just recently, in fact I think the last time I might have been on this program, that the teaching shortage had more or less evaporated, and that they were thinking, yes, there would be a shortage in some secondary areas, but across the board, pretty much not.
Okay. Just finally, there has been a bit of a call saying that teaching has become, a lot more challenging in today's environment, and new graduates do not have the skills they needed, and that was a sentiment echoed by the NZEI's Liam Rutherford. What would you say to that, Mark?
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, I think that we all know that teaching is working in schools is more and more and more challenging, and there are a range of ways to deal with that. I'm not sure that just fixing, inverted commas, initial teacher education is anything like the solution to that. You know, in the last 7 years, 15% of the teachers that are in schools now would have trained in the last 7 years. 85% of them would have trained before that. So, you know, we need to be dealing with the teachers in the schools and teachers preparing to go into schools. So it's got to be a multi-pronged solution.
Some Scandinavian countries, 5 years to be a teacher, I think you pointed it out. Is that a gold standard?
Well, it's certainly a standard that's worked in the Scandinavian countries where they have had the sort of educational success that a lot of people in New Zealand look at and think they'd like to have here. Yes. So, right. I mean, I think we have a very short initial teacher education period in New Zealand.
Okay.
And we can address that.
Yeah, pleasure to have you on again, Mark. Thank you so much for being with us on the panel. Mark Barrow there, who is the University of Auckland Dean of Education. A little bit of response to that. I'll try and get to some of that very soon. But for the meanwhile, we've had some wonderful responses about a new slogan to replace Whatever It Takes. David says, Pride of the Plains. I like it. That might be the winner. Let's go to this. Ashburton's town slogan could soon be axed, with the majority of Ashburton District Councillors supporting a possible change. The current slogan, Whatever It Takes, has appeared on lists of the worst town slogans in the country and has been in place for more than a decade. One councillor favoured a change to the slogan but also asked, do we need one? So with us is the Ashburton District Mayor, Neil Brown. Neil, kia ora, welcome to the panel.
Kia ora, Wallace, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
The first question is, what did it mean? What does it mean, Whatever It Takes?
Well, it was set up 10, 12 years ago, as you said, and Whatever It Takes can have many connotations as to what you could use it for. Whatever it takes to do whatever or receive whatever. It's just an open-ended phrase, really, which has done its time.
Has anyone suggested just shortening it and just saying whatever?
I don't think that'd be appropriate for down here.
And they've got to say it in that teenage voice as well, like, oh, whatever. Yeah. Like, definitely.
Don't worry, Stephen. A lot of listeners have suggested whatever.
I'm sure.
But we've had a few wonderful ones, Neil. What's the next step?
We just had a council meeting today, and we actually discussed it at our council meeting. So what the council has decided today is we're going to have a workshop on it and see what we want, see if we even want to have a slogan. And if we do, then what should it look like? What should it possibly be? Should we go out and talk to the community and ask them, have a competition? So there's a lot of questions there which we couldn't answer in a council meeting, but we can certainly answer all those in a workshop.
Stephen, what do you think?
I just wonder if anyone's come up with the sort of let's be really frank strategy and call it what it's often called. Has anyone suggested Ash Vegas? Or
I have never heard that. I've never heard it called Ash Vegas.
Well, it might just be in my family. I've got my wife's, that's where my wife comes from, and I really like Ashburton and its surroundings, but I think it's where I heard it. It's frequent.
We must have a few Vegases then. Ash Vegas, Rota Vegas. Do we have another one? Do we have three?
Ham Vegas, perhaps.
Vegas.
But in terms of, because there are quite a few interesting ones coming through, Neil, and they must mean something, because every city or district does have some sort of wraparound brand, right? David says Pride of the Plains. I actually think that's a beautiful one. The Taste of the South, says Richard. Could that be one, Neil?
Yeah, the Taste of the South could be, because we in Mid-Canterbury here in the Ashburton District, we grow everything. We have dairy, we have sheep, we have vegetables, we have the wheat and barley for the bread and the beer. So, yeah, Taste of the South is probably a good one. We can line that up with the others.
And Stephen, your wife is from Ashburton, and does she look back with fondness, or does she have ties there still? Or?
Oh, she was a journalist on the Ashburton Guardian, and that was her springboard to Parliamentary Gallery.
Okay.
I have been. It's gorgeous. I remember I had my first ever cheese roll there.
Right.
So, like, it did initiate me into the taste of the South. I was just thinking when you said that, it sounded a little bit like a cheese advert. You know, Ashburton, the taste of the South.
Mm-mm.
I don't mind it.
I don't think entirely serious, but I'd love to see a town that just decided to be brutally blunt and say something like, less scum than the competition, or get rich quicker, or something.
Just tell it as they think it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Neil, thank you so much for being on. Just finally, before you go, while we have you here, how is Ashburton doing?
We're actually doing not too bad. We're having a little mini boom, actually, because of all the COVID projects that have been coming our way and the work we're doing. So if people are looking for jobs, we're certainly looking for people to fill them.
Really?
And, we need skilled people down here, and they're just a bit short on the ground. Our unemployment's quite low, sitting about 3%, I think. At the best, we had 2%, and over COVID, it did rise to 3%. So we've still got jobs down here if people wanted to relocate.
Just finally, fly fishing, apparently quite a few people are interested in the fly fishing as a bit of a strength of Ashburton. Here's one of the fly fishers: a river runs through it.
That's
not bad. Who knows? Anyway, Neil, thank you. That is the Ashburton District Mayor, Neil Brown. I wasn't being cheeky. I thought that was just quite a...
I hear it in my, like, really cynical voice in my head. It's like, oh, yeah, you
know. No, because those...
The river runs through it?
Because those rivers are... Stephen, back me up. They're beautiful as braided rivers, aren't they?
Yeah, beautiful
braided rivers.
I was married down there, and the best man persuaded me to go ahead by a long walk along the riverbank.
I love it. I love it. Now, Gabriel says to you, Verity, look, there is some hope. For new builds, you need a 10%, not 20% deposit. If you're a first home buyer, you can put your KiwiSaver funds toward your deposit and then use half your regular KiwiSaver deposits to help pay your mortgage. Gabriel went on to say that Occam is offering quality apartments in her view in Auckland from around $550,000. It is doable if you plan ahead and are prepared to start with a modest home.
So basically what I'm hearing is buy an apartment for 10%. So it's basically buy an apartment.
Buying an apartment is not downgrading.
Oh, I love apartments. I completely agree. But I think it's just like
have
the
idea...
Have
you been on the show before because you're from London saying that you love city living?
I want an apartment. I don't want a house. But I think it's an interesting thing because like I didn't grow up with the idea of a house and a garden and a workshop and a driveway and all that kind of stuff. And I know a lot of Kiwis do. But I think the average price for new builds when I was looking at them in New Zealand is $750,000.
Yeah, $550,000 sounds pretty cheap.
$750 is for an apartment. You're looking $750 to $850 for a new build house in Auckland, like, and that's like a sort of townhouse that's sandwiched, like, you know, like matchsticks between other ones.
Yeah.
So you're still what 10%, $80,000.
Still a lot of money.
That's still.
Some don't have.
Yeah, $80,000, man. Right.
You're on the panel, RNZ National, Verity Johnson, and Stephen.
Stephen Franks.
Stephen Franks, sorry.
Why are you Stephen? Which one are you again?
I've got sympathy for anyone who forgets a name.
Yeah, no. I'm just because you wonderfully came in last minute when a panelist was called in sick. So lovely to have you on. Stephen Franks, Verity Johnson with me. It is time for headlines with Marama Te Pole.